you in a constant fight with your technology? And does it seem like the technology is winning? Well, you've come to the right place. It's time for Battleborn Tech with your host, Christy.
Even though you looked in your RAID mirror and saw your SSD is getting shaggy and needs a trim, let us level with you on Battleborn Tech, now and every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Pacific, broadcasting in Carson City, Nevada on 95.1 FM, streaming everywhere on knvc.org and available anytime on your favorite podcast app. Wondering if the USB cable is loose because it's plugged into the network port? Call Battleborn Tech, 775-241-3571. We'll help you with the ABCs of USB. 775-241-3571. Opinions on Battleborn Tech are those of the host and callers. This week, we welcome Steve and Lee. The opinions expressed on the show do not necessarily reflect those of KNVC or Computer Corps, who are imaging bootable Linux USBs to leave in parking lots.
All right. Well, we do have two phone calls, and we also have a pre-recorded rant from the Magister of Mystery himself, Christy, who's going to be ranting about the surveillance state. But before we launch into the phone calls, you got any fish heads of knowledge to toss into the soup bucket?
Yeah, I want to tell people about a terminal command, terminal admin command. You do that with the right click on the Windows thing. It's called winget update dash dash all dash dash include dash unknown. What that does, when you're so crazy, you say, oh my gosh, I want to do something and it's always yelling at me to update one time after another. Well, this time it lets you do the updates on your schedule. It's built into called winget, which is a package manager for short. And what it does, it runs through and does all the updates on your schedule when you do it. Now, if there's too many dashes to keep straight, I understand. Take a look at battleborn.tech for a full listing of the command.
Speaking of Steve and Linux and two dashes, here's Steve. And he is wrestling with Linux right now about a hard drive.
Go ahead, caller.
Yeah, hi. How you doing? My name's Steven.
Hey,
and I'm
Steven.
Calling about a Linux question.
All right, let's see how we do. Let's see how fast I can type into Google. I'm not really good at Linux, but we'll figure it out. What's up?
Okay, well, I'm kind of new to Linux because with Windows saying they're going away in 2026, but then I got an email saying, no, they're going to extend it to 2027.
Yeah, Windows 10. Windows 11 is still fighting on, but yeah, Windows 10 just got another breath of life. We had that a couple of weeks ago onto the 27th with 2027 in October. Yeah. So, but you're already on your way to Linux land. Okay. So what are we doing?
Yes.
What's the milestone in that journey today?
So what I did is I got a laptop that has Linux Mint on it.
Okay.
And I wanted to find out what size the hard drive was. And
okay.
In Windows or Windows 10 or Windows 11, you just go to System About and it tells you everything about it. But in Linux, there isn't something like that. So you have to figure out how to get to that. And that's what my question is. Is there some command line that you type in to get to that telling you what the disk size are, or how do you do it?
Well, you said Linux Mint, and it usually come with Cinnamon Desktop, that kind of flavor. And I guess the best way to go is that it comes built in with GNOME Disk, D-I-S-K-S, just like you expect. GNOME is one of the user interfaces that is Linux, run around Linux. And from the terminal or command line, it'd be GNOME dash disk, so GNOME hyphen disks, D-I-S-K-S. But you could just launch it from the menu, so type it down like you would in Windows down, a little search in the little box down there, or just search for a disk. And that will give you the connected drives, partition layouts, file system, use free space, lets you run smart disk, just about everything you want to do on that. You'll see like SDA1, SDA2. I think in Mint it actually tells you what it is. It'll tell you the size, the use, available, percentage use, that kind of stuff that you want to do. That should do it for you on the disk. Now, the command line, it has a couple commands. One is lsblk, and there's, that will help, if you're, you want to get familiar with the command line. And that gives a little bit more, more details about how the disk is laid out, but kind of the same thing, but it doesn't actually show the, it shows the size and what partitions there are and that kind of thing. So if you want to do that from the command line, lsblk will do that for you.
Okay. When you say GNOME, what does GNOME stand for?
What does GNOME stand for? GNOME is one of the ways to interact with Linux. Linux is just a little core program, and there's different flavors on that. It started as a part of the GNU project, which gives us the free software project. It's called, so GNU means that it's got it's got a user interface to it. It's got a GUI interface to it on top of the Linux. So Linux by itself doesn't have a user interface that has that. So when they talk about, when we usually talk about Mint Linux or some kind of distro, we're really talking about GNU Project, which is GNU Network Object Model Environment, which makes Linux usable, if you will. We hardly ever say that. It's a desktop that's on top of Linux. It has the desktop, the menus, the file manager, the apps like disk tools that we talk about, all the things that make the Linux usable. Linux is really a basic operating system, and the GNOME or the new GNU project is the frosting on top. And I'm just waiting for Anthony to text me a correction, but that's pretty much it. It's the wrapper around Linux that lets you use it. It's the desktop interface, if you will. Okay.
So it's like in the old days when you had DOS and then you put Windows on top of DOS.
I'm definitely going to get yelled at for that. But yes, it is kind of like that when Windows kind of was sandwiched on top of DOS. So, but we would like to say a lot more sophisticated. But yeah, that under it was something that was maybe limited and not easy and friendly to use. And on top was a GUI interface, a user interface, a graphical user interface is GUI. And that's GNOME. Yeah. So you're using it all the time. And people usually, you know, the only purists say no, GNU/Linux to say that, oh, I know they're different things. It's pretty much been all melded together.
Okay. Right? I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's kind of something not to know anymore. it's kind of a distinction without a difference anymore. Only the graybeards will call you out on it. But yeah, well, good luck on the Linux and on a good size hard drive and enjoy the journey there, Stephen. Thanks for calling, Battleborn Tech.
Okay, thank you.
Bye bye.
Bye.
Well, Anthony and the rest of you, sorry about the GNOME. It's GNOME, as we know, because it's GNU. It's not the garden GNOME, but it's from GNU is not Unix. And so that is part of it, and it's the object model environment. So that all together makes GNOME. And what that is, Linux is different than Windows. Windows, you get the desktop environment and the operating system core all together, one big happy package. Linux is different. There's just an engine under it, the Linux engine, and then you can put the top, the desktop environment, all the Windows icons, start menu, things you actually interact with is the thing on top of the the core system, and they can change from one to another. Now, if you're going to get a Linux Mint, you're going to have Cinnamon. If you're going to have Ubuntu, you're going to have GNOME. And if you're going to have something like Kubuntu, you might have KDE Plasma. There's different ones for different one. You don't really have to worry about it. When you install a Linux distro, it will have a desktop environment. Just know that there's different flavors, if you will, on top of the Linux engine on, and some of them are a little bit different. A lot of them has to do but how close to Windows they are. Cinnamon is probably the most closest to Windows from the Mint people. And KDE Plasma, that's also looking a lot like Windows. XFCE is the lightweight option. If you got a really old laptop, you don't want to be bogged down and you want it to run fast, you probably want to look at something with XFCE.
All right. KFC, extra crispy graphic environment. Yeah, there we go. A lot of initials, but a lot of power behind those initials, each one of them, from GNU to KDE. We've got another phone call here. This is Lee, and Lee is looking for a printer that he can't seem to find.
Go ahead, caller.
Hello, Christy. This is Lennox Lee.
Hey, Lee, you got a Linux question, or are you off doing something else?
Well, I'm still in the world of Linux, but this is a different problem.
Okay.
We have this nice Canon printer,
okay.
And we were on Spectrum Wireless Mobile and all that package, and somehow we switched to another supplier. Supplier. Should I keep the name secret, or can
sure,
I?
Sure, keep it secret. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But whatever it was, after that, the printer didn't work.
Right.
So,
is it a wireless printer?
Yes.
Well, almost assuredly, the wireless settings, like the SSID, the name of the wireless, has changed. So you'd have to set up the wireless portion of the printer again.
So the SSID is the thing I have to find out.
Well, yeah. I mean, basically, you're going to go to the printer and just start over with the wireless setup, and SSID, password, okay. All that is a part of it. Yeah.
Well, now, what if we don't know? Okay, there's another sad story that the person who set the wireless up originally and knows the password is deceased. So the password is
okay.
Unknown.
Well, you should be able to reset it. Did you change it and then the person was deceased, or?
No, it was set up and it was happily going on a merry way.
Okay.
And then this change of wireless providers happened.
Yeah.
And so now we don't know the password, and
well,
Yeah,
the password changed with the wireless password with the wireless provider change.
Oh.
Yeah, you got a whole new set. So basically you're starting from scratch with setting up the wireless printer. So you go over to the printer, not the computer, where you may have been banging on forever trying to get to work. But over at the printer, you got to go through. Hopefully there's a little screen and it'll say wireless setup under setup. And you go through and you laboriously type. Some have apps on your phone if you want to get into that. But that's a lot of dancing around, but you can, usually there's a little panel and you can click in the name of the, it'll show you what Wi-Fi's are out there. You pick that and then you have to carefully tap in the password to, the Wi-Fi access point. Yes. After you put in the service set identifier, the SSID. Okay. So that's all it is.
The SSID, the printer knows the SSID, its own SSID, right?
No. The SSID is what the radio station, if you will, of the wireless access point. The wireless access point has a you know, I'm a gateway or FBI surveillance van or something. or Spectrum 123 or T-Mobile 89, whatever they're having. Then you pick that one. It's usually on a sticker on the actual box that you got your internet going in.
Ah, right. Okay. So that's where I'll get the password too. Right?
Yeah. If all goes well, the SSID and the password will be on the sticker there. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I should have looked for that sticker.
Well, you don't know which place to bang on the box, the printer or the computer. So look at the box and then bang on that printer to get the Wi-Fi setup working and you should be off and running. There's a couple other things you might want to do. One is because you could use a good old USB cable, hook it up directly cable, not have to fool with Wi-Fi at all. And if you're really good, you can print it to a USB stick. You could do that with most likely you need to print to PDF is what you want to do. Save that PDF file on the USB, and then you go and plug that into the printer. Most printers will print a PDF for you from off a USB stick. But don't try to just take a Word file over there or something. You're going to have to print it to PDF first.
Oh, thanks for telling me. Yeah, I know. I saw the little slot for the PDF for the thumb drive to go in the printer. So
yeah,
that was my. Yeah, so now I've got a thumb drive ready to go, but I didn't know about the PDF, so thank you for that.
Almost assuredly, you have to print that to a PDF and then plug it in, and it'll either give you a print from file and then have different files, but PDF is what you're going to need to print that up. All right.
Yeah.
All
well,
right.
I have one quick comment on this PDF thing. So in Microsoft, you can say save as PDF.
Right.
But when I was in Linux, I said save as PDF, and that didn't work.
Well. And
so I realized that you have to say some other word except other than save. Let me see.
Export or print
export.
As PDF? Yeah.
Export, yes.
It depends. It depends what program you're on. There's and which way you do it. One, like a word processing program would have an export option. But if you're like on a web page or something, probably doesn't have that. It probably needs to print as a PDF to a printer driver that actually prints out a PDF and not out on a printer page. So
okay,
if you have like a LibreOffice or if you have Word or if you have almost any word processing or document creation thing, it'll be an export. Same with the graphics program. But if you're in kind of a non-creation program that doesn't create documents and graphics like a web browser or a photo editor, you may have to print to a PDF driver to do that. Okay? Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's great. So I'll report back next week because I have another question for you. But next week is another week.
All right. Thanks,
thank you.
Lee.
Thank you so much.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, it's always crazy when the printer doesn't work and it used to work. And that's the problem is you change one parts and other parts don't work. Yeah, that's what the system's about. They're all about things all working together. One of the things I find most people just plop down a printer in their office and say, go print now, magic. Or they go to the computer and start banging on the Windows trying to get it to hook up to the printer. And they never go over to the printer and type in the wireless setup. If you got a wireless setup, you're going to have to go over the printer, or maybe there's an app to get that printer talking to the wireless network, which can talk to the computer as well. Same wireless network for both. You can also always good to have is with the USB cable. Most of them come with that. Some of them have network. If you're a little bit more advanced, you're probably not listening to this show. But the USB cable, one of the things to watch out for is to install the printer driver software and only plug in the USB to a turned on printer when the install program tells you to. The install program is very, very picky. So install the software, the drivers, don't let Windows grab it. If you're using the download software from the actual manufacturer, HP, Lexmark, whoever, and wait until it tells you, okay, plug in that USB cable. If you don't, you can get really messed up and may have to have a special program to remove the driver and start all over. So that's a couple tips if you're using a cable, but you're probably using Wi-Fi. Make sure to set up the Wi-Fi on the printer.
Yep, or else dig out the ancient dot matrix printer and plug it into the parallel port that nobody ever has anymore. Well, we've got another call here. Oh, wait, this isn't a call. Christy, you got up at like 3 in the morning, couldn't sleep, and you decided to record one of your rants.
The best place to shop online might surprise you. It's not an app on your phone, not anywhere on your phone. We've been talking on the show about dark patterns, the tricks websites use to nudge you into doing something you didn't mean to do, like the cancel button that's impossible to find, the countdown clock claiming your cart is about to expire in 10 minutes. A related practice, it's a bigger deal than most people realize. It's called surveillance pricing. Some people call it dynamic pricing, though it's really the simpler cousin. Dynamic pricing means price moves with supply and demand, the way the airline fare or Uber ride climbs at rush hour. Surveillance pricing goes a little further. It uses the data about you specifically, not just the market, to decide what you personally get charged. Here's a plain version. A store doesn't have one price for toilet paper, groceries, plane ticket anymore. It can show a different price to every single visitor based on your location, your past purchases, even whether your mouse drifted toward the exit button on the page like you gave it a little tease. And this isn't just a rumor. The Federal Trade Commission opened a formal inquiry way back in July of 2024. In January of 2025, over a year ago, the staff released a report, barely, the vote was by one to release it, to about the pricing companies handed over, pricing practices. Those companies said in writing that their tools update prices anywhere from once a month to once a minute. And some business tools can generate a new price in milliseconds. They also told the FTC this kind of targeting drives revenue gains of 2 to 5%. That's business straight from their own paperwork. Now, you've probably seen the social media version of the story. A couple of viral videos this year claim shoppers save hundreds of dollars buying airline tickets from the public library computer instead of their phone. Reporters at the Washington Post looked into it and found it doesn't work cleanly as a video success, but the instinct is real. A library computer has no history with that store. Your phone, on the other hand, is carrying your location, your spending habits, who knows what else. One cybersecurity researcher described it as a straightforward tug of war. Companies trying to get the highest price it can, and you're trying to get the lowest one. There's no shame of tugging back on your side. So what can you do to give it a tug toward the low end? Well, browse in private or incognito when you're comparison shopping. It strips out some of the history a site might use to recognize you and your wallet. Check your phone's advertising ID. Yes, you have an advertising ID. On the iPhone, it's under Settings, Privacy, and Security Tracking. Settings, Privacy, and Security Tracking. On the Android, it's under Settings, Privacy, Ads. Settings, Privacy, Ads. A staff technology at the Electronic Frontier Foundation, yay, says turning it off is one of the simpler things you can do, even though by rights, you shouldn't have to. Now, think twice about typing your email address into every checkout box that asks, especially the ones dangling a loyalty program. Programs save you a little, but they can cost you a lot. If you're choosing between grocery or delivery apps, don't lean on just one. Comparing prices across a couple of them signals that you've got other options. That alone can work in your favor. Now, a few shoppers interviewed for one report swore simple, repeatable habits rather than big overhauls. Pause before joining a loyalty program. Resist the reflex to click on accept all cookie pop-ups and clear your cache and cookies now and then. None of it's dramatic. It adds up anyway. Now, if you're chasing concert or sports ticket, know that you're not the only one finding it maddening. One shopper described being placed at the front of line on one device and 30,000 people back on another. Same Wi-Fi, same show, different devices, different browsers, Even a friend's phone can occasionally put you in a better spot. I know I personally have been part of a group effort in trying to get the best position in line for some concert tickets for Hamilton. And we all got different spots, and the first one in got the tickets for the instigator of the group effort. It shouldn't have to be a group project to buy a concert ticket, but now it sometimes helps if you make it one. Now, it's not cheating. You're not doing anything wrong by declining to hand over more than the purchase actually requires for them to tell you what price they think you'll pay. So the next time a deal looks a little too perfectly timed for you, it might not be a coincidence. Someone built a system to make it feel that way. And now you know a few ways to step outside of it. So stop me before I smash the shopping cart. And now back to our show.
So, Christy, do you have any rants to add to your rant?
No, but it's amazing that you can get prices changed of that. And if you look closely, some of the big box stores have electronic prices right on the shelf. So I imagine there's going to be someday you'll just walk by and those prices will change as you're walking by. Won't that be fun?
God, that sounds like the Minority Report.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's spooky. Well, Christy, we have come to the end of our show, jam-packed full of all kinds of fun information. But do you have any words of wisdom going out?
This has been Battleborn Tech. Thanks to our callers, Steve and Lee, who called us at 775-241-3571. We're in studio Saturdays from 9 to 11 a.m. Pacific. Call 775-241-3571. Our theme music is by Break Master Cylinder. That's break like cookies at the bottom of the grocery bag, not break like stopping because you saw a rogue USB in your backup camera. Our engineer Joe Blyde bakes this into moist radio cake from Nutty Bits, Spicy Takes, and just enough mouse clicks to hold it all together. Our thanks to Anthony, our ex post facto checker. Our guard whale, so superficial intelligence doesn't escape this radio sandbox. Notice we use Claude AI because it will review, revise, and rehearse with us as many times as it takes. Our friends' texts just trail off or turn into a stream of confused emoji after a while. Support locally produced ad-free shows by donating at knvc.org. by clicking the big red donate button at the top right corner of the website, knvc.org, and give Battleborn Tech a shout out in the comments. Tell them that Tech Talk is your favorite music. Our email is questions@battleborn.tech. That's questions with an S and T-E-C-H at the end. Our latest links are bbtl.ink/stats. Get the links you missed there. Check battleborn.tech for show notes and announcements, and corrections land there too. The big ones we'll own on next week's show. This has been Battleborn Tech, a registered service mark of Christy Ramsey. Carefully review this episode or speed listen to the ones you missed at the show's website, battleborn.tech, or your favorite podcast player. Search for Battleborn Tech. That's all for Battleborn Tech, where the Wi-Fi is strong, the fonts are good-looking, and all the passwords are above average. For those listening to our radio broadcast, we're going from patch notes to grace notes. Stay tuned for High Desert Music with Molly Moser. Original songs, local artists, and the stories behind them. It starts right now. Have a neat week, and tune in Tuesdays at 8 p.m. Pacific, right here on KNBC FM 95.1.